binge-watching, Twitter scrolling, Facebook stalking. This stuff takes time, too much time. This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton talks with a developer who switched sides. He once created addictive tech, now he wants to save us from it. And that conversation starts now.
Hello, and thanks for listening. It's hard to nail down firm data on just how much time American adults spend in the aggregate on their mobile devices. MobileStatistics.com has been tracking it for a long time, so the data set seems pretty robust. So let's put it at 90 minutes a day. That scans out to 24 days a year and 3.9 years over an average lifetime. I know, context can be brutal. The focus on screen time and addictive technology has grown over the past year or so, with high-profile defections from the likes of Facebook and Twitter engineers. This week, we have one such defector.
How many likes do you have? That's the dopamine hit. That's the compulsive thing that people want now, because it's purely vanity. It doesn't tell you anything about the strength of your relationship. It's just a badge.
Quantity over quality is being leveraged, if not manipulated, to keep us on one site or app over another. Coming up, a developer who has seen the darker side and has countered it with what I'll call a self-control enhancer. Here we go.
Nitin Bhandari, CEO of Zen Labs.
Let's talk about how Zen Screen came into existence and what your thought process was when you wanted to launch something to help us watch our online activity, our mobile screen activity, our iPads, our tablets.
The backstory of Zen Screen is something like this, right? I spent many years in the tech industry, many of those building consumer products. It became very clear to me that as more and more products are ad-supported, for them to survive and thrive, they were starting to build a lot of addictive loops into their products, right? Push notifications to bring users back in. And this addiction became increasingly a problem, not just for adults, but even more so for kids, right? And I'm a dad of two. I've read a lot of science behind how all this dopamine affects the brain development, especially in younger kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so I put a small team together and I said, listen, we have to be able to build technology to improve people's relationships with technology, right? And that was sort of the genesis of this idea of how can we use technology to help everybody use technology in a better way.
Sounds like you've decided to use your powers for good and not evil.
You could say that, yeah. You could say that a lot of the stuff that I saw, and I extrapolated that, and I knew that that was just wasn't sustainable. Like if you look at what happened with in terms of like our real diets, right?
Right.
Calories became cheap. Food became extremely tasty, right?
Yeah.
Because it
sugar
was a deadly combination of sugar, salt, and fat, as you just said, right? And I could draw those analogies and say, oh, apps are really addictive. They're really fun right now. But is that sustainable?
You mentioned push notifications there. What are some other tendencies with these addictive behaviors?
It's a deadly combination in to draw parallels, right?
Mm-hmm.
Salt, sugar, fat.
Mm-hmm.
The technology uses sort of three deadly combinations, right? Push notifications, the ding, it's irresistible. You have to know what's going on. So push notifications. The second thing is we've gone to this concept of sort of infinite scrolls.
Yes.
Right? Everything we used until about 5 years ago had end of chapter cues. A newspaper article would end. A podcast would end.
Sure.
So on and so forth. But now you get on Facebook and it never ends. You get on Instagram and it never ends. And Netflix, YouTube, they never end, right?
Right.
So there's no end of chapter cues, which means infinite scroll.
Mm-hmm.
So they get you in, they keep you there forever. And then the third thing, which I think is the worst, is these vanity metrics, right? How many likes do you have? How many retweets do you
That's
have?
That's the dopamine hit, right?
That's the dopamine hit. That's the compulsive thing that people want now because it's purely vanity. It doesn't tell you anything about the strength of your relationship. It's just a badge. And now everybody wants more and more of that, right?
Yeah.
And so they get you in, they keep you there, and then they make you do more and more things to sort of score higher in the vanity leaderboard, so to speak.
When you have a personal dashboard that is basically a rat hitting a button for a treat, it's hard, right? I mean, it's hard to back up. So let's talk about Zen Screen, okay? And let's talk about your experience with watching people and behavior on these and how you have built an antidote to that.
To be very clear, I feel technology has a lot of good things to offer, right?
I'm with you.
And so, again, to keep drawing parallels to food, right? Just like in food groups, you know, there's a lot of food groups that are essential to survival. There's similarly lots of technologies that are essential to survival. So at ZenScreen, what we've done is we've drawn a parallel to that with creating sort of an app pyramid, right? The bottom of the layer is all these wonderful apps like search and navigation and educational apps and work productivity apps, which you can pretty much have as many minutes of as you want. Then as you get higher in the pyramid.
Like Gmail and calendar and things like that?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And then you go a layer higher, and now you suddenly encounter things like maybe carbs, which you should have some, but in limit, right?
Right.
And those would be your examples of entertainment apps, maybe watching some Netflix or YouTube, right? With ZenScreen, for instance, you can give yourself a daily quota for it, right? You can say, I want 30 minutes or 60 minutes for my kids to have these entertainment apps, right? Every app in the world we'd classify as entertainment or educational slash productivity, right?
Okay.
And you can have as much educational slash productivity time as you want, but you can have a daily quota for sort of entertainment time, right?
Right, yeah.
When you hit that entertainment time.
Passive consumption,
then your quota for the day is done. And then next day, you get all of that quota back, right?
Okay.
And then on the top of the pyramid is like what I call equivalent of dessert, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have some because it feels good, but you can't have 2,000 calories of dessert, right? That to me is social networking, right? So you need to do social networking, but you can keep doing that for 6 hours a day. We've built features such as Zen Breaks, right? We automatically detect your usage pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're using social media too frequently,
mm-hmm.
we automatically give you a 1 hour mini break, right? For your brain to recharge, right? And so it's not abstinence. That doesn't work, right? It's not all or nothing.
Right.
It's moderation, right? So ZenScreen is all about moderation in terms of your digital diet.
You said automatically providing Zen breaks. Let's talk about the technology behind that. What kind of user behavior are you watching for and what are you surfacing? And maybe you can extrapolate again as to maybe something in the data that has surprised you.
We watch for two things mostly, right? One is duration and then the second is frequency. Either you're binge watching something or you're constant checkers, right? And so if you're a binge user, you know, we need to put some guardrails around that,
yeah.
right? And that's our daily entertainment limit,
mm-hmm.
right? And more important for kids, obviously, who have less self-control than you and me. And then if you're a frequent checker, then we have things like Zen Breaks, right? Where we detect this pattern of every 5 minutes you're launching Snapchat because you're wondering what sort of story is going through next, right? It's almost become a digital crutch for a lot of kids,
yeah.
and even grown-ups, right? And so binge, frequent checking, and then late night usage, right? Late nights and early mornings are extremely problematic as well.
For adults and children?
We find that adults have a morning problem. They start watching their phone, 5 minutes, let me check what's going on in the stock market,
sure,
and
right,
what did Trump just do last night while I was asleep. And very soon, 45 minutes later, you're still in your PJs, you're still in your bed, haven't gotten out, right? So we have this feature called Smart Mornings. We understand you need to check what's going on in the world. We let you do that for 10 minutes, but then after 10 minutes, we give you an automatic break of 20 minutes, right? So you can get on with your day. You can do your morning squats or your push-ups or your meditation or yoga, whatever you promise yourself every night that I'll do next morning.
Right.
But you never do that, right?
Right.
Night is a problem for kids. It's a constant fight in my household, in every household I know, right? At 9 p.m. or 8:30 p.m., you know, give me that iPad back, right? Let's put it in the charging station so you're not sleeping with it. And so for that, we have this feature called Calm Nights, right? Where an hour before maybe your bedtime, all your apps, poof, magically disappear or stop working, right? And that's very helpful for kids to sort of have a regular pattern of
right.
healthy behavior. And then the most interesting part of the product that we learned from users and then built in is that parents are also on the same platform. And so now parents have an opportunity to really lead by example.
Let's do some more nuts and bolts about the app, and then we're going to ask about some macro behaviors. How many people can be on at a time? Is it like a family profile situation?
That's right, yeah. You can add yourself first or your kids first, and then add as many family members as you want. There's a one family account.
Okay.
But then once you log in with that account, then you can add as many other profiles as you want, right? And so you can have as many kids, as many devices per kid that you want to assign. And the platform just seamlessly works with that.
And what kind of feedback have you been getting from users already?
Number one feedback we get is end of fights. Like, that's the biggest thing, is that daily fights, you agree to some sensible rules as a family, you committed to software. Fairness is the other thing that comes up. If you switch from a kid's perspective, parenting is fairly random. right?
Yeah.
You may come back and you were stuck in traffic all day, and suddenly, just because 10 minutes your kids are using the iPad, you're like, you've been on that iPad way too long. So from a kid's perspective, parenting is fairly random. This makes it fair, right? Because now everybody sees the same dashboard.
You're a technologist. I can't imagine it's hard for you to get off of Twitter. I mean, I want to see what Anil Dash is tweeting out next.
Yep.
And others that we both follow, I'm sure. But did you have a personal learning curve when it comes to this?
I did, to be honest with you. It's not easy to stay off of Twitter for an hour at a time. But what I realized is self-control just gets you so far. Eventually, software needs to act on your behalf, right? Just knowing that I need to reduce my Twitter frequency of use from 45 times a day to maybe 20 times a day wasn't enough for me, right? But when software gave me automatic mini breaks, it almost became so much easier for me to sort of adhere to a plan when the enforcement was part of the product.
Let's stick with enforcement, but let's, as dad to dad, let's talk about kids. I want to remind everybody that Steve Jobs prohibited his children from using iPads. And Bill Gates did not let his daughter have a mobile phone until she was 14 years old. And they built this technology. At what point did you start to pull back from that and realize that this is happening to children? And there's not a lot of data that I can find. I mean, some, but not a lot.
Yeah, I wish there was a lot more research on this topic.
Yeah.
Now. And as parents, I'm sure you'll agree, waiting 20 years to find out what happened to our kids' brains is not an option.
Right.
We have to do something about it.
When did you start ZenScreen? When did it become a kernel in your mind?
It became a kernel in my mind about 2 years ago.
Okay.
There's a lot of R&D work that had to happen for about 18 months to make it all work, right? These platforms don't make it super easy.
No, they don't.
To run on top of them and then monitor and manage what's going on, right? So there's a lot of R&D that happened. And then we kind of beta tested the product for a good 6 months. A lot of feedback, a lot of enhancements.
The momentum around things like you're building, ZenScreen, and awareness of addictive behavior. It seems to be coming to a head at a time when a lot of people in technology, especially in the Valley, are having children. The average age of a Facebook employee is 28 years old, and a lot of them don't have 8-year-olds. But as that matures, I think that the market for these is going to get bigger, too. Is that anecdotally what you're seeing, too?
Absolutely. I think the market is becoming bigger. Awareness market, that's one thing.
Yes.
And then there's people like myself, technologists who feel like we can actually build tech to help. So there's a bigger community of people who feel like we can help people fight fire with fire.
An analogy that we had earlier with another guest, Scott Galloway, who told us that in the 20th century, technology saved the world, basically World War II. And in the 21st century, technology is screwing it up. So maybe this is helping us pull it back a little bit.
I think maybe we overswung a little bit.
Okay.
I have immense faith in people and technology. For that technology will continue to do good for the world and the civilization. Yeah, in sort of the grand scheme of things, maybe for a few years we've overswung, right? But I think we'll correct it.
ZenScreen, you said, took about 18 months of R&D. Mm-hmm. What went into that R&D? What is it built on?
There's three real key pieces, right? When you think about tracking and then helping you manage screen time, there's three things that are important. What app are you using right now? How long or how frequently have you used it? And then, can we build some intelligence to then be an assistant to you, right? To tell you, hey, Jason, maybe you should take a break, right?
Yeah.
There's three aspects to it. Turns out that each of those is really hard to do across multiple platforms and when they're closed. And so a lot of the technology goes on, let's say, for an instance, on an iPhone. What app have you used and for how long? Without, oh, by the way, breaking any of the encryption, any of the privacy features that we so love and respect. And then the second thing is, that how do we draw some conclusions based on your usage pattern? Is this a Twitter session that is now fifth in this one last hour? Or have you now watched Netflix for really an hour and 20 minutes? That's a lot of complicated analysis.
Yes.
And then a decisioning has to happen. And decisioning has to happen in real time, right? And so those are sort of the three pieces of the puzzle, right? What have you used? How long? And has it now triggered some kind of a condition where we should recommend to Jason that, hey, maybe you take a break?
How do I interact with it when I load it onto my phone?
You create an account. You know, Jason, you, for instance, would get a username, email, and password.
Okay.
Then every kid's device that you install this product on, you'd use exactly the same login. And then you'd identify that, oh, my kid Rhea uses this iPad, right? And my kid Anya uses this iPhone, right?
I see.
And
okay.
So each device gets assigned to some kind of a family member, right? But you have one account. And so in that sense, it's a single sign-on, right? You create one account.
Right.
And then every device, you sign on with that and assign it to a family member.
Can you tell us what software you use for your AI?
So a lot of the algorithms and the code is proprietary. Underneath it is a lot of the common building blocks that anybody would use. Like, you know, we have databases, messaging buses that, you know, tell one piece of software from another what is going on. We use a highly secure technology called VPN, Virtual Private Network.
Right, of course.
Which in an encrypted way allows us to look at some of the traffic patterns. We use database layers like Redis and SQL, MySQL, and things of that nature.
Is it differential privacy? Are you scraping a bunch of data but not personally identifying?
It's both non-PII, as well as we have another layer of privacy with our VPN where the content of your phone actually never hits our servers at all. It actually stays on your device and then goes straight to the web source.
Yeah, right? I think that's an important point. I'm glad we got around to that one.
And so we do all our analysis on the device and send only the metadata to our servers, right? So whatever you're browsing never hits our server.
One last question. It's a moonshot. I like to ask moonshots when I have technologists and entrepreneurs in. Artificial intelligence is coming at us a lot faster than I think any of us really, really anticipated. And we live this life. Mm-hmm. What do you see happening next in this? Are we going to see a massive flux in the labor market? Are we going to see a massive disruption in financial markets, things like that? I mean, is there something that kind of like is a boogeyman off in the corner of your eye?
Wow, we could have like a 20-30 minute conversation just on this. but I think there's going to be a few things that will happen, right? One is, yes, robotic process automation will happen, right?
Yeah.
AI powered, not just physical robots, but also back office kind of jobs, right? They will get a little bit disrupted. I think a lot of middlemen like financial services will get disrupted, right? Robo-advisors, robo-investors, sure. You know, those will take over, right? Mm-hmm. So it's democratizing all of the proprietary algorithms that hedge funds already have,
mm-hmm.
right? Will be available to you and
That's
me
fair.
For our, you know, daily retirement investing.
Right.
And in the grand scheme of things, yes, I think there'll be a labor market disruption, but this has happened before,
yeah.
right? This happened with steam engine. This has happened with agriculture. And every time we feel like, oh, it's the end of the world, suddenly we've gone from 30% of the population in the world trying to grow food to now 0.3% of the world growing food, right?
So those
other people actually found more higher level gainful employment. Right.
We've had this discussion several times on the show. Kevin Kelly came in and told us, why don't we let robots do what robots do best, which is the mundane, and let humans do what they do best, which is make mistakes and create. But then that's an optimistic view. It sounds like you're somewhere up in that range on the upscale.
On the zoom out level, right?
Yeah.
I'm absolutely in that end of the spectrum. Now, when you zoom in, right, will there be a temporary pain for 5 years, 7 years, 10 years when people get displaced? Absolutely. And I'm not trying to somehow trivialize that.
No, I know you're not being Pollyanna about it.
But yes, in the grand scheme of civilization,
right.
I'm much more on the optimistic side of all this AI and automation.
I think we're going to have to go through a war, just like we did when we came out of Industrial Revolution, too. I mean, there was a social upheaval behind World War I and World War II that had a lot to do with technology disrupting more than we thought it would and happening faster than we thought it would. And I think we're seeing some similar shadows now.
I think that a metaphorical kind of a war will be important, right? Where right now it's almost like we're manufacturing a lot of existential stresses.
Right.
But when those existential stresses occur time and again as a country and as a society, as a race, right, mm-hmm. we've kind of stood up and answered the challenge, right? So I'm much more of an optimist. I think to be an entrepreneur, you have to be somewhat of an optimist.
That's very true. This has been so much fun. Thank you again for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Nitin Bhandari, CEO of Zen Labs. They created Zen Screen. It's a time management app, dashboard, and service for the entire family. It helps parents enforce screen time limitations, and it helps kids prove they're not overdoing it. For links, please check out the show notes for this week at kgoradio.com. The podcast lives on iTunes and Stitcher. We post to facebook.com/techonomicsradio, too. Coming up next, more focus on children. This time, it's digital privacy with advocacy group Common Sense Media.
If an adult has made the purchase and opted in initially, that phone is tracked. And usually people don't go back in and reset all of the settings for a person who is under 13 years old.
That's next. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics. Please stick around.